Welcome to Airtime, presented by AIR in partnership with the new Alamo Draft House in Richardson. Airtime is a signature artist interview series featuring artists and creative thinkers in Richardson and the Dallas-Fort Worth area, where artists share about their art and why their creativity makes a difference. It's February 19th, 2014, and today's guest artists are bonsai tree experts and teachers, Sylvia and Howard Smith. Please give a warm welcome to our moderator, Chris Tucker.
Thank you and welcome to Airtime here at the new Alamo Draft House at 100 South Central Expressway in Richardson, Texas. Alamo Draft House is essentially located on the southwest corner of Beltline Road and I-75. My name is Chris Tucker, and I am your moderator. In my years as a radio announcer for WRR, composer, performer, and conductor, organizations such as Arts Incubator of Richardson engage its community with worthwhile events to showcase the arts. Airtime is a program designed to be a collective think tank on the arts, and we accomplish this by bringing in the artists from our community and engaging our audience members. Well, in radio broadcasting, time is an important component. So to help us along the way, we have someone, myself, keeping an eye on the clock. When time is up for a particular section, we'll hear this sound, a desk bell. Please welcome again to the Alamo Draft House stage, Howard and Sylvia Smith. Thank you guys for joining us.
We're happy to be here.
We are here today to talk about bonsai trees, and you both are key leaders of the Bonsai Society of Dallas. First off, let's set the record straight. What is the proper pronunciation?
Bonsai.
Bonsai. So not yeah. Bonsai.
Before
bonsai.
Going into battle, you yell, bonsai! But the little trees and trays are bonsai.
Okay. Well, in a nutshell, what is bonsai? Its origin, maybe its translation as well.
Bon for tree and and sai for pot. So tree in a pot is essentially the direct translation for bonsai.
And it's a what country of
its origin? Origin in Japan. Well, actually, origin in China.
Oh, really?
Origin okay. in China, yeah. Moved on into Japan. I think the origin started with the monks who used to put their trees, you know, their fruiting trees, in pots to take them with them when they were on excursion, when they would move to different monasteries. So they had to keep them potted in small trays or pots, and that way they were mobile.
So they were a practical use early
yes.
on.
Yes.
But in Japan, it's not really practical, is it? What is the true purpose of the Japanese art form of bonsai?
Depends on who you ask. Some would say to make money. but it's the art form itself, just practicing the art, the learning of patience, of time, planning things out over years to carry out a project, whereas different art forms might be completed in hours or days. This mm-hmm. may take 10, 20 years. Sometimes a project may take, be passed on to your descendant to complete.
Is there a meditation value to the bonsai tree as well?
Absolutely. I find that it's almost, it is a meditation process. Mm-hmm. When one of the processes of working on a bonsai, when especially the large juniper over there, is putting a wire on the branches to shape them and keep them in place. And that process on a large tree may take 5 hours, 10 hours, 20 hours, and break up into sections. But it's a meditative process when you're just sitting, you and the tree, and working on it and creating art.
Well, we've got plenty of time to talk about this part. So let's take us through the steps of the crafting of a bonsai tree, from its source material, how you decide what you're going to use and utilize, to its what is a finite product of what you're displaying here today. So take us through those steps of, if you had to teach somebody that has no clue on how to do it like me, what would you tell me?
It really depends on which of the trees you're looking at over there. Okay. Everything is a little bit different. Some trees are propagated from seed. And grown over time. Some trees are propagated from cuttings. Other trees are collected from nature. So to give you an example, the first little juniper that you see on this little kind of nouveau, you know, stand over here is propagated from a cutting by a gentleman who has a bonsai, you know, shop in, or had a bonsai shop in California. And he grew bunches of these guys from seed, so or from cutting rather. So that's where that one originated. And when they were, when it was little and it was pliable, he put the twists in it, and then he carved out the little, what they call shari, which is the dead section kind of in the middle of the tree, to sort of symbolize the larger tree that was collected in nature. That one is a western juniper that was collected out in the mountains. And what would you say, probably about 600, 700 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, so the little guy's probably only about, oh, I don't know, maybe he propagated those maybe about 30 years ago, and some of them are smaller, some of them are larger. So this one's probably, what, I'm guessing more like 10, 15 years old, maybe a little older, maybe closer to 20, because he's kept them pretty small. But the largest one is from nature, and so that grew that way all on its own. And the foliage is then, when you collect them in nature, then you have to work on the foliage to get it down, because when you find them in nature, everything is growing straight up into the sky. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we come into play, I guess, to try to change them a little bit and make them look a little bit more like they would if they were large, you know, and I don't know, you know.
Well, take the juniper for example, and you get it from the wild, you sit down with it. What is the artistic vision? How do you establish that before you even pick up the pruning shears or to take the chance to mold and shape? I mean, is there a process to where you look at it and say, what can this look like? Tell us about that artistic part of it.
And that process, let me step aside a little bit and talk. It takes a lot. One of the most enjoyable things about bonsai is how long it takes to really learn, and I don't want to say master, because I don't think I'll ever master. I don't think anybody really fully masters it, and that's the joy of it. It's a lifelong and journey and endeavor to just learn more and more with time. Some of the greatest professionals in Japan trained with they're in an apprenticeship for 12 years to 20 years, just even before they went out on their own. And so each species has its own desirable characteristics. On the big juniper, for example, on junipers you want to look for good deadwood, interesting deadwood, some twist, a lifeline that curves around the tree is very desirable. And but number one is health. So if you dig a tree from the wild, you keep it in your backyard, and you monitor it, you water it as needed, and you wait 2-3 years before you do anything to the tree. And during that time, you might go out and look at it and kind of figure out, how do I imagine the future of this tree? And that comes from looking at a lot of junipers, in particular in the wild, and also looking at exceptional juniper bonsai that have been created in the past. And then you start to see a feel for, you see the basic skeleton of the trunk, and you decide from there, the flow of the tree, it flows to the right or the left. And all trees have a front. Just like actors, if they're giving interviews, they may say, only film me from my left side. Trees have their best side, and that's what we present in the front of the tree. It has the most interesting characters to it. And sometimes it's difficult. A really exceptional tree may have 2 fronts, 3 fronts, but we pick the one we think we can design the best. So if we wait 2 or 3 years, we wait for the tree to be healthy, and then we work on the roots next and get the tree even healthier. And then maybe 3, 4, 5 years down the road, then we'll start working on the foliage and getting it into mind of how we want to style it out.
Mm-hmm. The movie that we're going to watch today, as you know in the audience here, is Karate Kid. And Mr. Miyagi first draws on paper. He looks at the tree, and then he draws and sketches what he hopes to accomplish before he goes in. Is that a technique when it's time? Is that something you guys do? You sketch it out on paper?
We don't, but our teacher makes us do that. So yeah, that's actually really important to practice what you think the tree is gonna look like, to actually visualize it somehow. And the more you draw it, the more you sketch it out, or the more you look at different trees that are kind of like that, the better feel, like you said, the better feel you get for what it's supposed to be like. You want the tree just to kind of give you a feeling like you're out somewhere in nature and you could actually sit underneath the tree and just relax and, you know, just enjoy nature. You know, pine trees should look like you're out in the forest somewhere, you know, and you're just enjoying the majestic feel of a very huge and old tree. And my teacher made me do it a lot.
Well, and to be clear, the term of bonsai is the name of the art form. There are many species, as you've mentioned, that you can create a bonsai from. What are some of those species? And if any, have you been able to find something here in the wild in Texas, in this area, that you might be able to utilize?
Absolutely. We have excellent native trees in Texas to use for bonsai, and those are the best really to utilize because this is their home. This is where they do the best. They thrive. When we bring in a tree from Alaska, it's not very happy in the summertime. And so at the beginning, we think we want one of everything, and we say, I can do that. I can keep it alive. And then you watch them struggle. Some will die. Some will barely stay alive. And so you decide it's just too much work. And so you stick with the species that live in your area. But to get back to the point of your question, ash juniper, excellent bonsai. Cedar elm are another excellent bonsai. Yaupon holly is another excellent species that would work as a native for bonsai. And there's others, but I would say ash juniper would be the ones that, and elms would be really highly desired worldwide. I think if it weren't for importation restrictions, the Japanese would love to get their hands on some of our cedar elm and ash juniper.
In order to get some of this, from native our area, the juniper, as you mentioned, I mean, do you just take a hike in the woods and go out and search for it, or is it something where you can go someplace and obtain?
First, I scout out my neighbors. And if that doesn't work, then we do try to look for places like that are under construction, places that are, they're, you know, we're pretty phenomenally known for tearing down trees and planting little stubs. So, you know, we take that as an opportunity to look and see if there's anything there viable for a collection for bonsai. And let's see, that usually pretty much covers it for our area here, you know.
Well, I've noticed just looking at the bonsai trees that you've brought or others that I've seen on the internet and so forth, a bonsai tree is almost like a fingerprint. Not one looks like the other. In order to accomplish that, there are many different styles that you can approach, formal, upright as well. Tell us about the multiple styles and if you'd like to use the examples as well from here.
Sure. And the styles, my thinking of what the styles were designed to kind of help it be an introduction to bonsai. After you've done it for a while, I don't know if I really think of styles except to communicate what I'm going to do on a tree to somebody else. A tree kind of lends itself to the way it wants to be treated. But there's formal upright, which is an absolutely straight trunk, branches right, back, left, around all the way to the top. And you don't see very many good formal uprights. Because the tree has to taper perfectly, there has to be good rootage for it to be a good formal upright. And the most common is an informal upright. It curves, and most of the trees up here would be more of like the pine on the end, the juniper, loosely informal upright. Then there's a slant style, which the tree come out of the crescent-shaped pot would be more of a slant style. And there can also be a cascade is one where the branch looks like a hanging off a cliff. It dips down below the level of the pot. Semi-cascade is just not quite of a deep of a plunge of a branch. And there's other styles beyond that. Broom style, just kind of a straight trunk, and then the branches all emerge and more like a oak tree, kind of like the representative of what an oak tree style would be.
And I've seen some writings about a forest style.
Forests are fun. You plant a number of different trees in a pot. You want variations in sizes and heights to represent a true forest. And you can have a near scene where it represents something like you're just entering a forest, or you can have it look like it's a forest from a distance.
I also read somewhere that the bonsai tree lives outdoors. It needs to be outdoors, but I mean, can it really be indoors as well, or does it just depend on where you live? Like you mentioned, a bonsai from Alaska shouldn't be outside here in the Texas heat.
Yeah, I have more people tell me, I bought a bonsai tree and about a week later it died, and I must not be very good at it. And it's not really true, because usually when you go to the street corner vendor or the malzai bonsai that you get, you wind up with a little juniper of some sort, and you are really excited. You bring it inside your house, and you know, it's in pretty cruddy soil when you get it that stays really wet. So it gets too wet, and juniper are outdoor trees. They don't like the inside. So they don't live indoors, and surely, you know, over a little bit of time, they will die. So you have to, if you want a tree or a bonsai tree that will come inside the house, you have to buy a tropical tree. Banyans, you know, all different types of ficus and banyans are indoor trees. So you can bring those inside. But everything that we have out here stays outside. It winterizes outside. It gets snow from time to time. Here in Dallas, we don't, except for this winter, we don't usually have snow that just sits, and so it doesn't stay cold for a prolonged period of time usually here. Overnight freezes are okay, and these guys do fine. As a matter of fact, some of them have frozen solid at times, you know, but I wouldn't recommend that. They have to go through nature. They have to go through dormancy. And in the springtime, just like the cherry at the very end there, they will bloom, and then the leaves will come out. Deciduous trees will actually drop their leaves and then bloom again in the spring. So it's just replicating what you see every day in nature.
Well, let's stay with this part of the bonsai craft, the long-term health of a bonsai tree. Do you have any tips, any techniques that you have when you're maintaining these trees, watering, pruning, continuing it? Tell us about that.
The number one thing would be use good bonsai soil. I can't emphasize the bonsai starts with the roots, the health of the roots. And too often, if we are beginners and we buy a bonsai tree from a shop or we get it on the street corner, we'll put it in potting soil and then it'll die about 3 months later, and we're kind of thinking we just don't know how to grow a bonsai. But the one most fundamental change that Sylvie and I have made over the years is we found a bonsai soil that just works for us, and we found it works pretty much nationwide, worldwide, and we stick with it. If you go into a bonsai forum, and which there are several, and you say that your bonsai, there's a way to get into a big argument is say my bonsai soil mix is better than your bonsai soil mix. And you wouldn't believe the length of these threads on the forums of arguments and disagreements and heated discussions. And if we were invited to talk at another bonsai club, we have to be very careful about what we say about the soil, because we may offend somebody about their mix. But what we found that works best is actually it's totally inorganic. It's lava products, pumice and lava, and then a type of clay that we could get it here domestically, but there's just not enough demand for it domestically to produce it, so we import it from Japan. It's called akadama, or red clay is what that means.
Do you, based off of the smaller container and then the smaller use of the soil, do you have to repot ever so a couple of years in order to maintain the same nutrients of the soil?
Absolutely. Since it's an inorganic product, and the akadama, the red clay, will break down with time. So you do need to repot about every year for these smallest size trees. The medium sized trees probably every 2 years. And if you have a very old tree, you can go 3 years up to 5 years between repotting. But the repotting provides new soil, new air space for the roots. The roots need to breathe as well. And actually go in, you trim the roots back and put them back in the pot.
Do you, you talked about great soil. Do you have the need to fertilize as well?
And absolutely. And depending on the tree, you need to know how hungry it is. Some trees like to be fed extremely a lot in certain parts of the season, like the pine trees, the ones with the needles are very hungry trees. And we use fertilizer cakes that we put on top of the soil. And in nature, the leaves fall from the trees, they break down over time, and they become fertilizer on the soil, on the forest surface. And you don't find fertilizer in soil in nature. It's kind of a replication of that process. We have fertilizer balls we put on top of the soil throughout the growing season.
Is crafting a single bonsai tree, is it finite? Or is it like the plants themselves? Is it organic? Does it change? Does it evolve as it grows over the years? I mean, we're looking at the 100-year-old juniper. I mean, I'm sure it didn't look like that 50 years ago. I mean, yeah. Does it always change? Do you always have to come back to it and, you know, change the vision of it as it grows?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one thing I always like to emphasize. Remember, this is people say, oh, I have a finished bonsai now. But you never finish with your bonsai trees. They're never a finished product. Remember, they're always growing. They're always changing. They're like your kids. They're never the same. So you have to just keep modifying. Large branches that turn too thick will be cut back. Smaller branches will take its place and start over again. And you start the process over and over again. And hopefully you hope that you raise at least one child that likes bonsai, so that you can will your trees over to them, or you find a really good buddy in the bonsai world that will eventually take care of your trees for you one day. But yeah, they're constantly growing, and if you take good care of them, they'll outlive you.
We spoke about this just a little while ago. You had mentioned you don't ever truly master the art of bonsai, but what steps would you take to learn about that process? You know, there's classes, there's studies. Can you learn it in a weekend, or really does it take years? If somebody didn't know or has not ever approached it but wants to, what are they selling themselves into?
It depends on what you want to do. If you're just want to enjoy your trees in your backyard, then it really doesn't take that much effort. You trim it every once in a while, you water it, learn how to keep it healthy. But I would recommend, if somebody's really interested in getting into the hobby, join the local club. There's a Bonsai Society of Dallas, is a Fort Worth Bonsai Society, and the members there they love the art. We enjoy teaching newbies how to take care of their trees, bring the tree to the meeting if you're having a problem with it or if you want advice on it. And that's really the best way to get started is read books. You never can quite get out of a book what you can at talking to an individual that's had experience with the hobby. And then if you want to take it a step further, then find a teacher and stick with that teacher probably for 3 years at least. As it's when we were first joining the bonsai hobby, Sylvia very quickly got conned into taking the vice president's position of the Bonsai Society of Dallas. Actually, it was a good thing. I'm being facetious. But that position invites different experts from around the nation or even out of the country to come talk to the club. And so we got to meet all these different people over the two-year period of time that she served that first term, which was a great experience. But we've soon realized everybody has their own way of doing things. And so we would hear one thing one month, and we hear something else the other month, and then it was just overwhelming trying to put it all together. And so after a few years, that's when we decided we need to find one teacher that kind of clicks with us and stick with them. And that's where we really felt like we learned the most and advanced the most in the art.
Do you address your bonsai teacher as sensei?
We could, but he rather us call him by his first name. But in Japan, it's very different. There's a formal apprenticeship, and it's not sensei, it's oyakata. And I understand that's the same thing that mob bosses are called in their business as well. But it's like a godfather. They take you in, they give you room and board, and you're there with them for years. You live with the family. You work all but one day a month. They pay for everything. They may give you a few bucks a month for your one day off to go spend. And you work 16-hour days for five years or more.
I never showed him these questions that I have, but he seems to be leading into the next question that I have. So we were talking about finances, And Mob, well, there's no relation to the next question with Mob and Godfather, but I mean, if someone was interested in owning a bonsai tree and doesn't want to spend a whole lot of time creating one, how much does a bonsai tree typically cost? I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of factors when determining a tree's value, but if somebody was interested in purchasing one.
Well, luckily here in the States, it's not, you know, you can buy inexpensive, you know, bonsai trees. And I would say roughly somewhere between, depending on how big a tree you get, $30 to $50 would get you a starting size small tree. Sometimes, you know, where they have somewhere in the, between $30 and $50, I would say, would get you a pretty well starting tree. Now, if you're in Japan and you're dealing with trees that have been in big bonsai shows, called one in particular called the Kokufu, it was a big grand national prize that you get for your, you know, artistic value of your tree. People come with suitcases, cash money, lots of cash money, to trade out for these trees that are then purchased by owners and then given to grand artists to take care of. And basically they just say, I need my bonsai tree this week because I'm having a party. And the tree comes and, you know, makes it to your backyard and you give your big party and everybody says, wow, what a beautiful garden you have. And then, you know, it goes back to the artist, you know, to take care of for a while. But yeah, here we don't have that and we don't have that market yet.
Bonsai in residence, yes.
Yes, yes.
Now, the art of bonsai is, and as we can see from this interview, is you're both very passionate about it. But it's not your job. What do you guys do when you're away from the craft of bonsai?
I'm a psychiatrist.
Okay.
And I don't know the link to bonsai. I've tried to connect it. And
meditation, maybe?
I don't really meditate as a psychiatrist either, but...
medicinal maybe meditation.
I need the meditation from the stress of the day, as everybody else does with their job.
I'm just an at-home mom now, you know. So, retired respiratory therapist. I was in the medical field for a while. Again, we don't make big bucks from bonsai yet, so.
Yeah. There's a saying in bonsai, to make a little fortune in bonsai, you have to start with a big fortune.
There you go. Well, did you find the craft of bonsai as a couple, or did this actually bring you two together?
Well, we actually met in high school umpteen ages ago. Life went its circles, and actually we went two separate different ways, and about 11 years later we ran into each other again, and Howard liked bonsai back when he was in college, and like everybody else, you know, you don't have time in college, and he killed his few little trees that he had. But he got back into it after residency, and we started dating, and I told him, I will kill a cactus. You don't want to marry me. And then we went on our first bonsai buying trip, and I spent $300 on bonsai and bonsai paraphernalia, and I thought, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. So now, I don't know, I'm guessing we own somewhere about 500 or so trees, I'm afraid to say. So this time of year is quite busy for us. We, you know, just quite busy. And now we have customer trees that we take care of too. So it's really, really busy now. So,
well, tell us a little more about the organization. As you mentioned, Sylvia becoming the vice president of at one point, and maybe you're the president now, of the Bonsai Society of Dallas. What does the organization offer?
It's been around for, 47 years? And I think it offers, mainly, it's camaraderie for people with a similar passion, as I guess any club would be. It's a great way to make friends, hang out with people, and enjoy something that you love together.
Talk shop.
Yeah, exactly. And we have monthly meetings. We bring in guest artists or have a local person and teach something about bonsai. We have an annual auction where people bring trees that they want to sell, and it's a good way to get a new bonsai tree, or to sell one that you're tired of having around your backyard. We offer annual digs to people in the club scout out areas and find places to dig, and we set up a time to everybody to meet and do the dig there. There's an annual convention. The Bonsai Society of Dallas is part of a statewide group of bonsai societies under the auspices of the Lone Star Bonsai Federation, and we rotate having an annual convention. And the upcoming convention is in April in Houston. I think it's April 10 through 12 or something like that. So if anybody wants to see a bonsai convention, it's really a happening thing. So check it out.
You had mentioned that you guys are very busy. So is it about preparing for that convention? Do you guys bring your trees that are in your house? You mentioned 500 or so. To the convention, or what makes you busy? What is this time of the year for
repotting.
The bonsai site? Repotting.
Think about 500 trees, and then think about having to work on all those root systems and repotting them. That's what keeps us busy. And if you don't get to something and it becomes too late to repot, you wait till the next year, and then you've got twice as much to do. So we're a little behind. We have a 4-year-old daughter who threw us off by, you know, a few years, and so... So we're real behind. We're trying to get all caught up. But that's what keeps us busy. That's what keeps us busy. And the convention, a lot of fun if you want to just go and look. They have they set up a show, a big display. They have vendors from all over Texas, you know, who love the hobby. But most of all, you get to meet a lot of really, you know, tree-loving people.
As far as local events, what's coming up that we might be interested in looking forward to? I'm sure as a club you might meet once a month. How about that meeting, and is there something else, a dig or something we might be interested in looking into?
President?
Yeah, just miss the digs. The digs are for members, and they just happened this last month. This is the winter season is the time to dig material from the, you know, collect material from the wild. We used to have a show at the Arboretum, which we had to change our venue at the Arboretum because they like weddings better. So we're looking for a new place to set up our show so that we can have an annual show somewhere. Maybe another art place. I don't know where yet, but we're looking.
And to learn more about the society, is there a website address?
Yes, actually, we brought some pamphlets that are sitting in the back. But just if you look up on the internet, bonsaisocietyofdallas.com. Yeah, that's who they are.
All right. Well, that bell means that we're going to turn over to the audience. So if you have any questions, please raise your hand and I'll come around with the mic.
Okay, I had a bonsai tree once. I'm sorry, it didn't end well for the bonsai tree because I'm not very good with watering and stuff. But I was just going to ask you, what is the most popular accessory with the bonsai tree? Because for me, it was like the little bridge. But there's also the little guy. What do you think is the most popular bonsai tree accessory?
And that would be the difference between bonsai and pinjing. Bonsai is Japanese, Japanese trees in a tray. Pinjing is the Chinese style of bonsai. And they really are the ones that create the mud men and the bridges and like setting up little scenes. That's done in Japan also, but it's a little bit different. That's more of a forest setting in Japan. It's called a saike. But I'd probably say mud men would be the most popular accessory that you see. And you can find mud men from $1 up to like antique mud men for several hundred dollars that are collector's items, and some of them are pretty cool looking.
Thank you for sharing this evening. Those pots are really shallow. What do you do with the roots? I mean, I've heard all sorts of things, and I want to know for real.
Well, what we do is we try to work on the root system so that it becomes sort of flattened from the bottom up, so that all of the roots kind of extend from the base of the tree and out. And so roots have a tendency to grow deep, you know, make a big taproot and grow really deep, but there's nowhere to go in a pot. So if you don't do anything, what they'll do is they start circling around the pot and trying to find kind of the end. So if you get rid of those taproots at the bottom of the root ball, eventually, with really good soil, with really good bonsai soil, they become fibrous roots closer into the tree. So it's a little complicated of a question, you know. You have to kind of see it to really understand it. But you want to create really good fibrous roots close to your tree so that you don't have that issue. And then that way you can put them in shallower pots, you know, and it's not a problem. You don't have any taproots to deal with. So I guess the question is get rid of the taproot. You get rid of the taproots.
Speaking from complete ignorance, how do you start off with a cutting and end up with something like that?
A lot of time. You want, if you take a cutting of a species you want, you don't want to have a lot of leaves on it because the cutting doesn't have any roots. So you need to find something with just very few leaves. And you get a very, very sharp blade. You can use a razor blade, but a grafting knife is going to be sharper and make very clean cuts, kind of like a spike on the end of it. And you can put it in 100% little lava particles. You can put it in old soil, pretty much anything. And you can also add a rooting hormone. Often comes in a powder. You can just kind of dip it in the powder and then put it in the pot and let it grow roots. And then before it get a big mistake people will make after they get a successful cutting is then they'll let it grow. And then you're looking at a baseball bat. And they're not very interesting. So early on, after it's taken rootage about a year later, you might want to put it in a bigger pot, but also apply wire to it and give it some bend and give it some interest, so it'll be something you want to keep around for a few decades.
In Karate Kid 3, there's a scene where the villains basically snap a bonsai tree in two, the trunk or whatever. And Mr. Miyagi, over a certain amount of time, brings it back to life. Is that just Hollywood, or is that possible?
Depends on where the roots were when it got snapped. I remember the scene. I just don't remember how much of the tree was cut off.
I think they used duct tape too to.
Yeah, there's a little bit of truth in that. The section of the tree that would actually still have roots could still be salvageable. You know, you just have to wait and let it kind of recuperate, let it get strong again, and let it bud back. But to literally glue it together and have it look exactly like it did, no. That doesn't happen. Now, I'll tell you something funny. In Japan, black pine are considered like the king of bonsai. And the bark on the black pine is really difficult. It takes many, many years to grow that way, to get really good bark. And so you will hear a lot of times, you know, you can't touch the bark on a tree. You just can't touch. Even when you're repotting, you have to hold it from the armpits of the branches, but you can't touch the bark. And if you knock the bark off, you actually devalue the trees by quite a bit, especially the big old trees in Japan. So apprentices will walk around with super glue in their back pockets just in case they move a tree from one place to another and it gets caught in their shirt or something. They whip out the super glue to make sure they stick the bark back in before the teacher gets back.
You led me to my question. You were talking about some of the trees that are very old. Do you have any idea of what the oldest bonsai tree has been? And how old are some of yours? Recognizing the fact that you are both about 22.
With a 21-year-old at home, yes. He's adopted, I'm sure. The oldest that we know of that we've seen in Japan is over 1,000 years old. There's quite a few in Japan that have been handed down for 250, 300 years. So that's a lot of days that have gone by without neglect of watering every day, checking every day. The oldest one we have is probably the Western, right now is the Western there, 650, 700 years old. And I have one that's about the same age. And there's quite a few, the Rocky Mountain junipers, some of the Sierra junipers that are collected from the wild are well over 1,000 years old. So there's quite a few bonsai in the U.S. that are well over 1,000.
Sorry, one more question. You mentioned devaluing, and so that brings to mind, what are they worth?
They range, just like any art, you can find a painting for $5, you can find a painting for $2 million. It's the same with bonsai. And it's also, how much does the person want it? How much does the person like it? It can be very subjective. So a lot of beginner's trees, as Sylvia said, are $30 to $50. In the States, you'll find a few $15,000, $20,000 trees. Well, there is this one gentleman that I saw his nursery in Japan that he created a tree from cutting, and he was exceptional at growing trees. And in 25 to 30 years, he created a tree that usually would have taken 200 years to create. And its trunk was about like this big. The roots spread out in the pot about like this big, and it stood about this high off the ground. And it was his best tree, and he spent the last 30 years creating it. And a gentleman came to his nursery with two suitcases full of money, about the equivalent of $1 million in each, and offered it to him for the tree. And this man is a retired engineer. He's not a wealthy man, but he valued its presence in his life so much, he turned the money down.
Could I add a tidbit about the movie?
Absolutely.
Okay. The trees that you see in the first Karate Kid were actually supplied by a gentleman that we know in California. They went to his nursery and asked him if they could borrow the bonsai trees to put in, you know, in the movie and have on the set. And so, you know, he was excited and let them go ahead and, you know, borrow the trees. And they were just on loan, so they would bring them back after, you know, some of these trees he'd been, you know, his dad had started from cuttings. And so, you know, they were on the nursery for a while. And so, long story short, at the end of the filming, you know, he went to go pick up his trees. And he realized one of his bigger trees, probably his favorite tree, was not there in the batch. Turned out, Mr. Pat Morita loved his tree so much, he just decided he took it after the movie and just took it home with him. And I guess nobody told him that they were on loan, and I guess no one dared to confront him about him taking the tree. But yeah, he got to take one of the nicer tree. I'm guessing it's the big nice tree that he was working on that he got to take home with him. So anyways, that's just a story, an aside.
Well, that's a great lead into our final part of the interview, and it's our game we call the Top 10 Shorties. I'll have a minute, and I have 10 questions, and you just have to answer it as quick as possible. I know there's only one mic between the two of you, so we'll see about shouting it out kind of thing. So it's a simple, maybe one quick question. You say very fast the answer, and we'll see if we can get through in a minute's time. So, all right, are we ready?
Sure.
Okay. Are you a morning or night person?
Morning.
Night.
Are you a cat or dog person?
Dog.
A favorite bonsai style?
Juniper.
Cascade, okay. If you had $1 million, what would be the first thing you would buy?
My house.
Favorite music you listen to while shaping a bonsai?
Rock.
Classical.
Rock and classical, okay. Do you guys believe in love at first sight?
Of course.
Sure. There you go. That's the correct answer. Pens or pencils?
Erasable pens.
I like that.
Okay. You're inspired, you're in a hurry, and you're hungry. Inspired as, you know, shaping a bonsai. What's your favorite fast food place?
Grocery store sushi.
Agreed.
Grocery store sushi. Movie favorite, Karate Kid of the 80s or Karate Kid of the 21st century?
80s.
All right, that's good. And in the end, have you ever produced a bonsai tree that you just thought, man, that thing's ugly?
Yes.
Absolutely.
All righty. Everybody give a round of applause. Well, Howard and Sylvia, thank you guys so much for joining us. This is Airtime, created by Arts Incubator of Richardson, and I'm your moderator, Chris Tucker, here at the new Alamo Draft House at 100 South Central Expressway in Richardson, Texas. Airtime is underwritten by Alamo Draft House, Dr. Barry Kinesic, Christensen Davis Bullock LLC, and Eric L. Wise, and funded in part by the City of Richardson through the City of Richardson Arts Commission. We invite you to check out artsincubatorrichardson.org for future events and news.